Hey, it's the Productize Podcast. My name is Brian Castle. Today I'm talking to Rosie Sherry. She runs ministryoftesting.com. That is a thriving community of software testers. So people who actually test software applications and websites and things like that, they're the testers. They test the user experience. They test to make sure that all features are working properly and that there aren't any unforeseen risks or vulnerabilities, which are extremely important things. And there are people who do this for as their profession. And so Rosie has built up this really amazing membership community. There's a free forum. There's a paid forum. There are some courses. They do a ton of conferences. Believe it or not, there are conferences for software testers. And there's a lot of them. And they are a lot of people attending. So it really is an important piece of the puzzle when you're building any sort of product. You know, the larger companies employ a lot of these folks, but it's the smaller companies, the startups, and even the services who use software who really need this sort of testing done. So yeah, it was great to talk to her about just what is testing, what goes into it, what's involved, what to think about, but more so, you know, about how she's been able to build up this community over the past, it's been several years now that she's been working on it. So yeah, here you go. Here's my conversation with Rosie Sherry from Ministry of Testing. Enjoy. Okay, so I'm here with Rosie Sherry. Rosie, thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
All right. So today we're talking about software testing. It seems like a very specific kind of trade and a service. And before I heard about you, I never thought of offering this as a standalone service. You know, it's interesting because I mean, I've been a web designer, web developer, have worked on many websites and many software applications, and all the testing in my experience has been done either by myself or by my team or other teammates in-house. But the idea of bringing in outside consultants is interesting. But anyway, why don't you kind of fill us in on what you do today, like all the things that you're involved in, and then we'll kind of go back and get the story.
Sure. So today I call myself the founder of Ministry of Testing, and that's a UK-based company. I'm based in Brighton in the UK, and we kind of call it a community for software testers, or more so now for software testing. So rather than focusing on testers as a career, it's more testing as a craft. And yeah, basically I'm the founder. The company itself started officially 6-7 years ago, but it spawned off online community that I started about 11 years ago. And now we've got a team behind us. We're about 10 permanent employees now, strong. And yeah, it's the past couple of years it's just been nuts. And for me, it's kind of started because I was once a tester, and I just kind of felt like there was nothing out there for us.
So before we really dig into what is testing and everything, I guess I just want to kind of clarify, like we asked, like, what is ministryoftesting.com? Like, what can somebody kind of expect here? It looks like it's a combination of content. There's a private community. There are some courses. And also, is it for people who want to become testers as their occupation, or people who need help with testing? Or yeah, can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so mostly the website, should I say, it's about to switch over to a brand new website. We've been working on that for quite a while now.
Well, maybe by the time this airs, it'll be out.
Yeah.
This will come out sometime in probably May.
Okay, so I'll have to give Richard a strong nudge to get that out. But yeah, at the moment when you go online, online is mostly focused around three areas for us. There's the online learning platform, which we call the Dojo. There's the community forum, which we call the Club. And then the other aspect is there's kind of conferences that we do. So those are kind of like the three main things. So as an example, like all our conferences will end up online on the Dojo. We record every single talk going back from when we started. So there's like a huge archive there. The club used to be called the Software Testing Club. It used to be on softwaretestingclub.com, but then we moved it into subdomain as under Ministry of Testing. And then there's the conferences. And mostly it's all really targeted at software testers or people who are interested in testing. And that tends to be testers who do testing for a living. And most of them are full-time employees for a company. So a typical purchase for like our online platform or a conference does come from a company or the HR department, so to speak.
Right. They're trying to train their people or get people up to speed on testing software.
Yeah, basically.
Got it. And it looks like you do run quite a few conferences. So like, how large are these events and like how often and where are they? And
so when I started, I did the Software Testing Club Forum for like 4 or 5 years. And there was a point where I said to myself, I can't do this anymore. It's taken up too much time. I either have to make it work for me to make kind of a living from it, or I'm just not going to do it. And I had always felt like there weren't any good conferences or events out there for testers. So I thought it would be a good idea to try one out. And I was living in Cambridge at the time. So I, you know, being me and, you know, I just do things that make it easier for me. So I did it in Cambridge, and there's, you know, a great tech community in Cambridge as well. So yeah, I think that was 2012 we did our first one, and that had like 60 people. The tickets were really cheap. It was really about testing out the idea and seeing whether people would follow through and whether they actually wanted to go to an event and pay something to go. Because quite often you get people saying, yeah, I'll pay, I'll go. But when it actually comes to it, they don't or can't. So that was like testing the waters. Then after that, my family moved back down to Brighton, where we had been living before. So we just continued to do it, the same conference, but we started doing it in Brighton instead. So Brighton kind of became the hometown or the home conference for Test Bash. So it's the biggest one we have. We've had up to 350, 400 testers for Brighton.
Wow.
So that's a one-day conference. But then in Brighton, we also do workshops on the day before and some training courses.
So for members of Ministry of Testing, like, do they get access to all these things? But I guess the conferences are kind of like a standalone ticket sales. But I guess access to the courses and to the forum, and is it like a monthly or annual subscription? Like, what's kind of like the model there?
So at the moment, the tickets are standalone on their own. We charge anywhere between 250 to kind of £400 for them, plus VAT. And then the forum that's just free. It's a free forum, free for all. We've got a private area in there for paid members. And if you become a member, you get discounts to our events as well. So we get quite a few members who sign up, and then they get like £50 off each event. So quite often that kind of pays for their annual membership.
So that's interesting to me, is that the forum, because I thought about, like, I run a private forum for paid members of my productized community, but I don't have a free forum, or like paying members get access to the private forum and a private Slack. But I've thought about offering like a free forum or a free Facebook group or something like that. But I never could get my head around, like, well, what's the separation between the free stuff and the stuff behind the paywall? I'm curious about how you do that. It sounds like you do have a free forum and then also a paid forum.
Yeah, I mean, the free one is really how we started. So it makes sense for us to continue that as like the heart of the community, so to speak. And the paid part, to be honest, is only a really recent thing. As we built up the dojo and the online courses, we've kind of we have private areas for discussions with some of the trainers. So some courses, you can like ask questions to the trainers. So there's a private section for that. We've also started using it to give the discount codes out to members, because up until then, it was quite a manual process, so to speak. People would have to ask for a code, or we would email a code out that they could use. But now they've got an area on the forum. They know that they can always go to find that discount code.
You know, it's also interesting to me, just this whole profession of being a professional software tester. I mean, literally right now, I've been doing a lot of Google searching and researching on courses to learn how to code. I'm trying to up my coding game and go beyond just HTML and learn how to, you know, code in like Ruby on Rails and build applications and things. And there's a ton of information online, paid courses, free courses, YouTube videos, Udemy, books, you name it, on teaching people how to actually write and develop software. But to be honest, I've seen nothing on like how to be a professional tester. And you're nodding your head like, yep, I know that.
Really, that's like why I'm here and we're here, so to speak. It's like, you know, I've been nodding my head about this for years, but, you know, it's like creating content is really hard work, and creating good content is even harder. And trying to get people to write good content, it's just so difficult. So, like, we started the dojo 3 years ago thinking, yeah, we can get some good content out within a year, you know, but 3 years later, we've got some good stuff up there, but nowhere near what we would have liked to have. And it's just, you know, it's such a slow process. And then to top it off, it's like there's so much really bad testing content out there. It really does make me cringe and thump my head against the wall, because there's all these people that kind of rank really highly on Google, like for SEO and all of that, on all these software testing ideas. So all these people are coming across bad testing advice. And, you know,
I guess that might feeds the misconception that on the professional level, like if you're a coder or a small software development shop, that you could do your own testing, right? Like, well, I guess that's the question. Like, can or should a software developer, software designers, should we be doing our own quality assurance testing, or should we be outsourcing that or hiring dedicated people for that role?
I think it really depends on a lot of things. I think a lot of people can test their own stuff to an extent, but then it's like, you know, how far do you want to take it? And it's like, as a developer, you can design stuff, right? But it doesn't mean you're going to do the best job at it. You can get by. And it's the same with testing. It's like, you can get by testing your own stuff, but you're probably not going to do the best job if you're not like studying it day in and day out. So like all these testers in our community are literally just like focused on testing, and they know all the things that they should be thinking about. And I bet you anything is that you get a good tester in and they'll spot problems practically straight away. Obviously, it depends on the project and stuff. But I think the beauty of testers is not necessarily going in and like breaking the product. It's like they'll come in and ask you a lot of questions and you'll be like, oh, yeah, we didn't think about that, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're going to pick back up on like how you've built up the community and that side of the business. But yeah, I mean, I think it'd be good to kind of dig into the art and craft of proper testing of software. I think there are so many software products, mine included, that probably fail miserably on just doing poor testing and poor planning. So yeah, like, can you talk a bit about like what kinds of products or websites are we talking about when we talk about user testing? Like, do your people tend to work on testing public marketing websites, or is it more for like applications like SaaS and mobile apps and things like that, or both?
Honestly, there's a mixture of everything. We've got members in our community from the most common people that you know, such as Twitter, to Atlassian, all the way to web agencies, banks. I think there's like it's a huge mix of people, and they're all working on kind of different products and different strategies and different budgets.
Is there some sort of like commonality across all testing projects? Like, we always start with testing or reviewing this part of a project, and then we go to this layer, and then we go to that layer. Like, is that, or does it really differ from like if you're testing a bank website versus testing a SaaS application versus testing a social network? It would be completely different.
I think it's more probably based on the kind of business and team structure. So like with banks, you tend to have a lot of people who are still working in the old waterfall kind of way. That's generalizing a bit. And then you have people who are working at startups who are very agile or more agile or wagile, whatever you want to call it. So, you know, if I were to roughly split it, I would probably roughly split it into the old world and like the newer world, where it's like non-agile and agile.
So it's really about, yeah, like the waterfall, which basically is like somebody writes up this huge spec document, like this is the plan, we're sticking to it no matter what, versus agile, which would be like, okay, we're going to break things up into smaller issues and we'll learn as we go and maybe adapt.
Yeah, basically. And you do get people in the middle who are trying to bring more forward thinking, agile type test thinking to projects, because like the old school of testing was basically you write up a huge long test plan and then you write test scripts which you would have to perform once the product was ready, and you know there could be a huge wait for that to happen, and then by the time you get to the test scripts, which were written by someone else, you'd go through it and none of it would actually make sense. So it's, you know, it's a huge, huge kind of waste. But there are stories of more people doing exploratory type testing, which is kind of more agile type testing into older environments to get a bit of that mix in there.
So software developers know that writing unit tests, writing integration tests into the software itself is a big part of software development. And it's still a very necessary part of software development. But when it comes to user testing, that goes a step beyond. Like, I guess we're talking about things that the code can't necessarily test for. We're talking about like user experience testing, right? Like, can you give us maybe a few examples of the types of things that a professional tester would look for or would go through or would report back to a team?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that trying to see or look at the product from many different angles. So they would try to put the hat on of a business person. They would try to put the hat on of as a user. They would put a hat on as a support person, a salesperson. You know, they try to think of all these different scenarios and not only test for those scenarios, but also like work with the team to ask them questions and understand the product and where the risks lie.
I guess it really gets into like that customer persona stuff, right? Like it's almost like there's a fine line between the user tester, like the testing professional, and like a user experience designer, somebody who would be doing customer interviews and that sort of thing.
I think there's an overlap there, but I think that simplifies it too much. And I think, I guess one of the biggest challenges that testers have is the fact that they need to know so much about the business. So they're probably one of the only people in the business talking to everybody else because they want to understand the product as much as possible. So they'll be talking to developers, to designers, to project managers, to the business, to support, to customers, to everyone. And really, they have this really great picture of how everything interconnects. But if you compare that to like a developer, they're mostly stuck in their own world speaking to one or two people. So I think that's where the advantage comes, is that when you start to have that overall bigger picture with a certain level of detail, you start to understand how things work and or don't work, and you can start to see where problems do happen.
Does testing come into play during the pre-build, like during the design phase, the planning phase, or is it only after features are built, now it goes to testing before we send it to production? Or does it also get involved even later, like, okay, this is live in production, we need more testing? Like, when and where does a tester go in and do their work?
It should be from the beginning, if I'm, you know, ideally, but that's not always the case. And it would go all the way through to the end. So testers can be involved at the very beginning, perhaps in a lightweight way, but then as the project builds up, they'll get more involved and be able to contribute in different ways and test when it, you know, up to when it goes live and once it's live and when it gets updated and all sorts. I mean, people think that, you know, it's like testers can't help testing from the beginning, but as a profession that kind of understands software, you know, if you can get a tester involved to help with the design of it, to, you know, talk about the product and ask those important questions that maybe no one's thinking about, then it really does make sense to have some kind of testing involvement.
Are most testers like working full time at a company, or are there freelance testers? Like, I'm curious, like people in your community, is that like a common thing, like freelance tester going to work for a variety of companies, or, you know, perhaps like productized services? I know that a lot of people listening to this podcast are consultants, or they're interested in launching productized services of some form, and maybe they have this sort of skill set, maybe they're interested in learning it, but perhaps offering it as like a productized service offer. Do you ever see that sort of thing, or are testers typically just in-house people?
I'd say there's a huge majority who are mostly permanent people or kind of what I would call full-time contractors. And I personally don't call contractors freelancers. I think there's a big difference. Like, contractors tend to be full-time on a job at any one time. Whereas it's like freelancing, I know like in the startup web world, you get a lot of freelance designers and programmers, people like that. But you do get them in the testing world, but there's not nearly enough. I don't think people who just, you know, can manage multiple projects at any one time with different clients, there's not a lot of that. And I don't think that personally helped helps the testing world. I think it would be great if there were more freelancers out there working with smaller companies, like, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's probably the smaller companies who aren't properly tested because they don't have the budget to hire a full-time tester, but they would really benefit from having a part-time or, you know, project-based tester come in.
Which is why you then, in the testing world, you end up getting like startups like Applause. There's a few out there. I'm not even going to go into them, but they do a lot of paper bug type testing. They probably don't call it that so much these days, but basically a lot of testers get rewarded per bug that they find, which I personally just don't like as a model, because it's like, you know, testers end up focusing on the wrong thing. They're not asking the questions, they're just looking for bugs. And like, testing is more than finding bugs. It's, you know, it's about looking for risks and helping people understand the risks, which doesn't always mean that there's bugs in the projects. It's just like there's things that people need to be thinking about.
Yeah, and it's like, what is a bug, like, and what is just a poor design or poor experience? Yeah, interesting. Cool. So, yeah, I mean, why don't we go back in the story? I mean, how did you even get into testing yourself?
Well, I can blame my husband for that. I like that one. This is going back to 2001. I was working in a bank in a really boring job. I was like 20, 21 or something. And I just really wanted out of it. So I was like trying to think of what I could do. I didn't have like any qualifications or anything like that. But I kind of wanted to get into tech, but I didn't know what was out there. But he was working at a company and he helped me kind of get my foot in the door for a testing job. And I guess the rest is kind of history. I think once you get your first job in a certain space, it becomes easier to get other jobs. And it didn't take me long. I stayed there for like 6 months. It wasn't a great job, but I stayed there for 6 months and I managed to get another testing job. Quite a big pay rise at the time. And I just continued on from there. And I was just kind of self-teaching myself from what was out there, which wasn't a lot, to be honest. There were a few people blogging. There were a few books out there. I kind of enjoyed it. And then 2003, I had my first child. So he's now 14. And then I had another one 18 months later. And I kind of tried to get back into testing after that, but I kind of soon realized that it just wasn't worth it for me. And to be honest, as a woman with two kids, as soon as I mentioned kids, people just like went quiet on me. So, you know, that was a reality. So it's like, okay, fine. You know, I had to kind of like figure out, and, you know, to me, it's a blessing in disguise, because it's like, you know, I didn't really want to be working full time and being away from my kids all that time either. So it's like, it really made me think about what is it that I need to do.
Yeah. Is that when you started to like publish online about testing and?
Yeah, so it was coming up to the whole web 2.0 time, kind of like 2007. I was doing a lot of things locally, which I was enjoying. I'd started like a Girl Geek Dinner meetup social. And that was really kind of positive for myself and just getting to know the local community. I was also involved in creating a co-working space. So I was doing a lot of that and, you know, just completely fascinated by the Web 2.0 stuff that was going on at the time. I was introduced to like Seth Godin and people like that at the time. And I was just like, I kind of fell in love with the whole kind of marketing aspect of things and the blogging aspect. And, you know, I think I probably found my calling a bit more in that side of things than in testing. But I realized that I could really merge the two, because all this cool stuff going on in the web world, and I was like dead jealous that nothing was going on in the testing world. But I saw it like as an opportunity for me to do something about it.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's really interesting. It's like taking, I feel like there are a lot of people who kind of discover online marketing and just entrepreneurship and remote work and flexibility, and then just applying that to some other passion or some other experience that they've had, you know. And I've seen that play out in, for different people in different ways. I mean, I've always kind of thought, because I have, before my web work stuff, I had a background in music and music production and audio engineering and recording and everything. And I always kind of regretted like letting that fade away and the instruments collect dust and everything, but like if I had taken what I've learned about online marketing and online design and everything and applied that to some niche community like that, that would have been good. But in some ways that ship has sailed, you know, but I see that happen all the time. And so I guess that's kind of what you were thinking back then is like, okay, you're home, you need the flexibility and you're interested in online marketing. You don't necessarily want to go back and work full time as a tester again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what were kind of your first steps then?
Well, I did a bunch of freelance work, which was very kind of ad hoc. So it was like I'd get a project for a few weeks and then it would stop and I wouldn't do anything else for another few weeks, for example. A lot of that tended to be for web agencies. And I had done, like after my first child, I had gone a few months after, I'd gone and contracted for a web agency. And I was like really frustrated at the time because I was commuting into London from Brighton, which was like an hour and a half each way. It wasn't a lot of fun. And often I would get there and there'd be nothing for me to do. So I'd like end up sitting around doing nothing, waiting for a release and stuff like that. So at the end of that, I just said, look, you know, I'm not going to contract like this anymore. But if you ever want any testing, you know, just get in contact with me and I can do it from home. So I did that with a few companies, and a few companies ended up coming back to me like two or three times each year or something for small bite-sized projects, which I was quite happy to do. It kind of fit around my kids. And then like 2007, I started the Software Testing Club, which was like when Ning came out. So I created it on Ning.
Oh, yeah. And that's what eventually became the club today, which is the forum.
Yeah. So, and Ning was fine. It was great to begin with, but it's like, it didn't take them long to like sell out and then they stopped, you know, developing it. It was really frustrating. It's like,
yeah, I remember there was like a couple of years there where every community was on Ning and then they all just kind of disappeared.
Yeah. And we only moved away from it like last year, I think.
Looks like you moved to Discourse. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Discourse is great. It's really kind of lifted the community up again. And it's really great for forum content moderation.
Yeah, that's what I use for the productized forum, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's like they thought of all the things that we need. I love the mobile experience too. I most of the time I'm communicating on the mobile version of the website. Yeah, they really do a great job. So I guess at that time, that was the first thing that you put up there was like this forum, and that was a free to join community. I'm always kind of interested. I know that you're doing this kind of in the, well, not the beginning, but like the heyday for these online forums, right? Like how did you attract the first members and how did you, especially as a free community, like how did you weed out how do you moderate that sort of thing? And like, what are some of like the early challenges that you've had with that?
I guess the early ones were attracting people. At the time, I kind of knew some testers. The community was much smaller back then, but I had a blog and I knew some people that I'd kind of been conversing with. So I kind of just set up the forum and I said, hey, come and check this out and come and join. And it was really just like a game to me. You know, I didn't really think, you know, I didn't have plans that this would like take off. And then people joined. And I remember being really happy like when 100 people joined. I was like, yay, wow, this is great, 100 people. And by the time we stopped using it, like at the beginning of last year, it had like 20,000 people, which, you know, it's a fair chunk. It's not like massive, massive, but, you know, it's...
And I mean, like the draw for them, like the reason somebody would seek out a community like this and join it and be active in it is because they are a professional tester and they're just looking to connect and kind of talk shop with other testers. Is that...
Kind of. I think the thing for me was that I pitched everything that I did with my heart and honesty of trying to make it a real place for, I guess you could call it now, human connection. And what the testing world suffers a lot from is it being so corporate. I was about to say something else. It's, you know, it's just so such a corporate world where everybody's...
You could curse on this podcast. No problem there.
it really frustrates me. It's like, All these testing companies, they want your money for something. So it's like one of the reasons I started a conference was because all the conferences out there had like the speaker slots were sold to vendors. So you'd end up going to a conference and watching a vendor speak. And you're just like, you know, what's the point of this? And that was the choice for testers, is like, what, you know, there was literally nothing else out there. So my idea was like, I said to myself, well, if I can create a space that doesn't have that, doesn't have any of the sales pitches within the forum, within anything I do, our philosophy is about just speaking to each other about testing and nothing else. And to me, that's not a big ask. I mean, we should have had that already, but it just wasn't out there. And I think because I did that and I consistently did that without selling out at any point, even though, you know, some money would have been nice, I never sold myself out to those kind of things, whereas elsewhere everybody else did. So I've become known as like Rosie Sherry is good. Rosie Sherry, you know, is an honest person. She's trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. I could see the attraction to that, especially when everything else out there is so monetized and promotional and corporate and everything. I guess what I'm wondering, because I've been thinking a lot this year about community and trying to improve mine and try to kind of revive mine in many ways. And like, one thing that I've been thinking about with online communities, really marketing in general, but especially community-based marketing, is like all the members need to be in some sort of like mission together, right? Like everyone's trying to achieve something. Like they're trying to go from point A to point B, and there's some sort of commonality in that. That's what kind of connects these people and brings them all to this sort of site or this community. Like, is there something like that with testers? Like, is it they're trying to be more effective at testing, or they're trying to level up their career as a tester, or what would be the what are they kind of striving for together? If that makes sense.
For me, I think they're striving for more connectedness together, to learn more about testing, and that testing is really, in my opinion, just beginning as a craft. It's like the old way of doing things. We just like have to chuck all of that out and start afresh. And so we have all these things that we kind of need to shake off ourselves, and I wouldn't say forget, but, you know, accept them, but look to the future and move on and create something better.
Do you mean in terms of like the tools and the technologies that people are working with and using in their testing work?
I think everything from the skills to the tools to the way we learn to what we learn to how we talk about testing, to how we help others build their skills up, to how we recruit testers. It sounds kind of daft, but it's almost like a land grab to me in the testing world. It's like everything is up for grabs for testers who are passionate enough about things to make a difference. They have a real opportunity to do that at the moment, because we're getting rid of the old way of doing things, and there's a lot of opportunity for people to kind of make their mark with new ideas. But the challenge is with the community is that a lot of people don't have the confidence or think that they can't make a difference. So I think where we come in is like, actually, we can show them that they can do this, and we believe in them. And we, as cheesy as it sounds, is like, we do change testers' lives. We have changed many people's lives. And I get people telling me time and time again, is like, thank you for creating Ministry of Testing. It's just literally, you know, it's like literally changed their lives, and they've now like restarted, their passion has reignited. They were stuck in a world of boring testing, and they've discovered all the things we're doing, and they're like, wow, how come I didn't know about this before?
It's amazing how powerful just that connection can be, the community and around what you do for a living, you know? I mean, I'm in several communities, and I'm not a big conference person. I just go to a couple every year, but yeah, like there were a few years there before I was more involved in these communities where I was just doing my work as a freelancer alone in my bedroom, as, you know, just doing projects and like not really connecting with other professionals in my field. And it was like night and day. Not only was it way more enjoyable once I started connecting with people, but of course it led to many more opportunities and networking and everything.
Yeah. I mean, one example like recently is, there's quite a few examples. I could tell you a couple. Recently there's this woman called Constance, and she's been doing comics her whole life practically. And she was at a point where she didn't think that she would be able to do her comics anymore. But then she went to one of our conferences. She's a tester as well, but she does like comics like as a hobby. And then she created a comic of the conference, like this kind of like infographic type comic. And she kind of worded things like perfectly. She was like, she really understood the messages of all the speakers. So she had a slot for each speaker, and she just, you know, worded it perfectly. And it was like, wow, this is amazing. And then from that, she's now doing like regular comics for us. But for her, that's like been a real positive movement for her, that we've seen in her that, you know, she's like this little shining star in her own way. And she's reignited her passion to combine comics with testing. And it's kind of, you know, lifted her up a lot. And then there's the other story, which I should probably tell you about. So at conferences, we got like temporary tattoos of like our logo and some of our characters. We kind of got these kind of monster type characters. So like at the meetups after the conferences, we'd like hand them out and people like slap them on their skin and on their face and then on their necks. And I said to this one person as a joke, I said, well, if you get a tattoo, you can get free entry for life if you get a real tattoo. She was like, really? I said, yeah, go on. It was just a joke, but
she went and got it.
there's now like 7 or 8 people with tattoos of our logo. And I'm just like,
wow. Nice.
It's like, wow. I don't have one yet.
It's truly a movement. So, okay. You launched this forum. This is around 2007, 2008. It's free. It's a great community. It's starting to thrive. I mean, how do you start to make money at this, right? Like, how do you sell out now? Like,
so the first thing was the conference in 2012. So that was like, and then I did a couple of training courses that I got a couple of testers to run. I made a little bit of money, not a lot.
And you're still like balancing the contract projects and running this community and.
Yeah, a little bit of contract work. I think at the time I had a 1-year-old, so I had my third child in 2011. So, you know, I wasn't in any rush. My husband at the time, he's a techie, and he was consultant at the time. I wasn't really under any pressure for myself to like go out there and earn money. So it was just like building on the side. And then I did it the second year, made a bit more money. That was in Brighton. So we went from like 60 people to, I think like, it was probably about 130 people the next year in Brighton.
So that was really like the first thing was the conferences. And that seems like a good first step, because it's like, right, you enjoy the free online community. And if you want something more and you want to spend on that, you can just come in person for this event. And it makes sense to obviously charge for an event, because that has costs involved in it.
Yeah. And it's a great opportunity for people to actually meet each other. So it's like lots of people, they'd seen each other online for years and years, but had never met. So that was really nice within itself. And it was probably, for me, it still is like when I go to the conferences, the test bashes, it's still really the only time I actually meet up with other testers. But like Brighton continued to grow like every year, not massively, but every year it was like 30, 40 more people. And then it's like by the time we get to the fourth year or something, we kind of outgrew our space in Brighton, which was like at a capacity of 250 people. So we had to look for a new space to accommodate a bit more. But to be honest, we don't really want to, I think like 350, 400 is like the biggest we really want to be getting for a conference.
Yeah. Yeah. I found with conferences, like the smaller, the better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So what else? Like, I guess as we kind of fast forward up to today, like what were the kind of milestones in terms of the business of running this community? So the conferences continue. You have many of these conferences every year. Is that still like the primary driver of like revenue, but compared to the membership, or how does that kind of break down?
It's kind of split three ways at the moment. I don't have the exact figures. It's roughly 1/3 each way. So some a bit more than the other. But so I got to like year 4, I think, and people started asking me like, can I do a test bash in my city? Can you run a test bash here? Can you run a test bash there? But until like I think it was the 4th or maybe 5th year, it was only really one test bash a year. I think 1 year we did 2, and the second one was meant to be focused as like a tiny test batch, like a really small one. And then around that same time, we kind of started to launch the dojo. So the income was the conferences and training and workshops that we were doing. I did a fair chunk of like marketing type work for companies. So I'd started a newsletter every week. So every Sunday evening, I would sit down and put together a newsletter for the community. And after a while, I managed to sell kind of like ad slots and that, as an example. And we would also promote some events for other companies. Like if other companies were doing webinars and stuff, we would kind of be quite selective in what we would promote. But so there was some income from marketing style activities like that. And obviously some sponsorship for the conferences as well. So income was roughly 50-50. At the time, by the fourth or fifth year, it was roughly 50-50 for conferences and marketing type stuff. And around that time, I was also like, my husband had come on board and had started helping me with all the tech stuff. But it was still like mostly just me and my husband with a couple of freelancers helping me out. So I had Thomas, who's our designer. He's been with us from day one as a freelance designer. He's amazing.
Yeah, what does like the team look like today? Like how many people are on the team?
We've got about 10. I'm starting to lose track. I think it's about 10 permanent employees and a bunch of freelance people and people who help us with specific conferences.
And membership just continues to grow every year, every month?
Yeah, every week, every month, membership grows. So the other third would be the dojo at the moment. So it's like marketing, conferences, and dojo is kind of how...
And the courses.
Yeah. But they're all kind of interlinked. So it's like, I don't really think any of these could exist without the other. So it's like the dojo would not be what it is without all the conference talks. Like the vast majority of the content there, even though we've got a lot of like articles and mini text-based courses and some video courses, the vast majority at the moment is still the conference talks. So it's like that really drives the dojo. And then the dojo also drives the test batches. And it's kind of really become interlinked, and we didn't really expect it to turn out this way. We've kind of been like adapting.
Yeah. I mean, before we wrap up, like one of the things that I know is always a constant challenge, especially for membership community websites is churn, right? It's, you know, it's unlike a software, typically a membership, you know, somebody joins and they spend a few months in it and they kind of get what they wanted out of it. And then they kind of their interest goes somewhere else and they churn. But I get the sense that in what you're doing with this, like focusing on professional testers, this is their profession. This is their career. It's not like a one and done kind of thing. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but are your members really staying in for a longer period of time because this is really their career?
I think so. I mean, I'll be honest and say I haven't actually looked at the numbers on that. And I probably should, but it's just one of those things is that we've just got so much going on is that we need to kind of work on our processes for that. But most of them hang around. We've still got members who signed up when we launched, and that was 3 years ago, for example. We've still got people who come to our conferences from years and years ago. It's too many to go to all of them now because... We're doing 7, 8 this year from like San Francisco to Australia to Dublin to Germany.
It's fantastic. Well, I mean, this is coming out probably sometime in May 2018. So, you know, for folks who really want to get into this or interested in software testing as just an interest or as a profession or as a service, like, obviously they should go check out ministryoftesting.com. But like what else is happening this year? Like what's kind of coming up for you guys? I know you have a couple more conferences, obviously.
Yeah, just more conferences. For me, I hired a CEO, so Richard. So he took on the role kind of end of last year. And so for me, it's very much about trying to get him having everything he needs to kind of take the company forward.
That's great. Is that for you to just like really step away from the business or for you to still be involved, but in a different sort of capacity?
for me, it's to be involved in a different capacity. And I think like the reality of running a business is that it can really take it out of you. It's like we're trying to do so much, like as a family and at work. And like 3 years ago, it was just nuts. It's just like me and my husband doing most of the stuff, and it just completely, you know, stressed me out to the bone. And it was then that I said, like, right, I got to hire people to do the work for me. And I was trying, but it just wasn't happening, or I kept failing. And
how did you find a CEO?
He was a guy in the community, top guy. Yeah, he did his first speaking gig at Test Bash.
Oh, very cool.
You know, so most of the people that we hire is through the community, who show like a real passion for what we do. But we've been working together for over 2 years, so I have a lot of trust, and I know who he is and how he works, and he's just got energy like no other. And I don't know what's next, and I don't really have plans to start anything new, but I just kind of want a bit of headspace to think about things and think about exactly what I want to do, just because I spent a lot of time doing things that I wasn't really happy doing. And that's the whole point of hiring a team, to do it.
Yeah.
So I've got a community manager, I've got a marketing social media person who are, you know, there's two people basically doing part of the job that I was doing before, or trying to do it. They're doing it 10 times better than I was, but I was just trying to juggle too many things. So I just want to try to get the business in a good state with a great team and see what I want to do next. Whether that's in the business or not, I don't know. I really can't, you know, people ask me and I'm like, I don't know. I just want to have headspace to think, because I literally don't get headspace when you're...
A plan to not have a plan. That sounds like a good one to me. Very cool. Well, obviously we'll get all of this stuff linked up in the show notes, Ministry of Testing. You know, Rosie, thanks for taking the time. This has been really, really interesting, really helpful.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
All right. Now, before we wrap up, let me ask you, what did you think of this one? Was it good? You learned something? Are there any other topics you'd like to hear me cover on this pod? Well, let me know. No, I mean, really, like, let me know. Hit reply on any of the emails that I sent you. I'll read every single one. I try to reply to everyone. What's that? Oh, you're not on my list yet. Okay, well, head over to my site, productizepodcast.com. You can get on my email newsletter that way. I'll send you, you know, new episodes and all the show notes, but I'll also send you my newsletter where I share all sorts of articles and other insights on entrepreneurship, building products, productized services, software, SaaS, and other cool stuff there. So yeah, check that out over at productizepodcast.com. And of course, if you have a minute, I'd really appreciate it if you could head over to iTunes, leave a 5-star review, or at least just 5 stars. You don't even have to leave a review if you don't want to, but that would really go a long way to helping other folks like us find this podcast. So yeah, thanks a lot for tuning in. I'll talk to you on the next one.